one game. An NBA Finals seventh game. One game, the difference between basketball immortality and crushing disappointment. One game, a chance to become a legend, a hero, a champion.
What motivates me now more than ever is winning another championship.
It's going to take heart. It's going to take an uncanny amount of energy and strength.
To win a championship, it was one of the most emotional times of my life because that's what I play for.
One game, a chance for a legacy to grow. One final game, a season-long journey draws to a close.
Top of the world! Top of the world!
All right, we are back, and we have our game number 12 on our list is the Washington Bullets against the Seattle Sonics from 1978. The Bullets winning 105-99. This was the first of two straight years that these two teams played in the finals, and they split it. The Bullets, in fact, this was their first and only title, but they also went to the finals in 71, 75, and 79. Wes Unseld being on all of those teams, and Unseld and Elvin Hayes being on the 75 and 79 teams as well. So, oddly, the Bullets were only 44 and 38 this season, and they had a 0.82 SRS, which is, I imagine, it would be one of the worst for, if not the worst for, an NBA champion. And usually you have, I mean, you have at least three or four SRS. I mean, even in the 70s where there was a lot of parity, this was pretty unusual. And the Sonics as well, they were weird. They started 5 and 17, and then they finished 42 and 18 once Lenny Wilkins was hired. So kind of a strange two teams to be making the finals, but, you know, it worked out pretty well. They had a pretty classic seven games. It's a nice game seven.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's we always, you know, for fans of this podcast, we talk a lot about the 70s and how much fun it was for an NBA standpoint, because, as you said, the parity was incredible. There were so many different champions, so many different teams in the finals. Like, you know, we're not always talking about the Celtics and the Lakers, you know, in this. I mean, they had their presence felt to an extent, but at least you have these other little teams come in here and fun. And these are one of these two teams are one of the ones that I always remember is, you know, obviously those Bullets and those Sonics, you know, back-to-back finals. You know, teams, you mentioned like a guy like Lenny Wilkins, you mentioned a guy like Wes Unseld or whatever. I mean, those are really the guys that, you know, in a league with a lot of parity, these were, you know, some constants were these two guys and or these two teams rather. So, yeah, it's a really interesting one. And yeah, the way that they kind of got there is unique as well. I mean, that Bullets team not being good, and we should have done it. I not kicking myself for not looking at the SRS of, you know, all these teams. I got to imagine that's the lowest. I mean, I'd be shocked if there was anybody lower. I'm trying to think, you know, without looking at the data right now, of who would be lower. But I mean, you look at a sub one, you know, simple rating for an NBA champion is unique. But that was the 70s,
yeah.
You know, especially the late 70s NBA. It was like, you know, just get to the playoffs and then who the hell knows? Like, there's a very solid chance. I mean, there's a lot of those teams, you know, in the 70s that seem like unpredictable, you know, either finals appearances or unpredictable champions. So
it's funny. The Sonics was actually only 1.48 and it was sixth out of the 22 teams in the league. Yeah. So, yeah, that's just that's kind of a strange year. Now, that was the year. Now, Bill Walton got hurt that year. That was the year that the Blazers started 50 and 10 and then Walton got hurt. And right. So, you know, they were, you know, they probably would have come out of the West if that hadn't have happened. So he came back for the playoffs, but he didn't play well. And that was when they had all the issues with, you know, him later saying they misdiagnosed his foot injury and were, you know, giving him, you know, there was lawsuits and he left and all that stuff. But all the stuff that's in the breaks of the game. But so, yeah, I mean, the Bullets had, you know, they'd already had Hayes and Unseld and Phil Chenier, of course, but they added Bobby Dandridge, who was, you know, great player for the Bucks early 70s teams to that team. And the Sonics had their star backcourt of Gus Williams and Dennis Johnson. They had rookie Jack Sigma. They had, for one season, they had Marvin Webster, the human racer, veteran Paul Silas, and downtrend Fred Brown. But for the most part, their key players were actually very young, and they kind of disintegrated after the title team. They definitely would have been a great foil for the Lakers in the early 80s if, you know, that kind of hadn't happened. Webster didn't really have necessarily like a great career, but this year he was really awesome. And in this playoff series, he was pretty awesome too. And he, in this game, he had 27 and 19. Sigma had 21 and 11. And, but the Sonics guards really struggled. Dennis Johnson went 0 for 14 with 4 points.
That's struggling.
Yeah, and Williams went 4 for 12 with 12 points. So, so not a great performance from either one of those. The Bullets, they kind of had like a really balanced Unseld 15 and 9, and Hayes, Dandridge, Tom Henderson, Charles Johnson, and Mitch Kupchak all were in double figures. So they didn't really have one star there, but had a lot of stars. And Dick Motta in this series did something very special.
Yeah, and that's old Dick Motta. He he popularized that. Yeah, the opera isn't over until the fat lady sings.
Yeah, I guess it was written. It's traced back to I think a Washington sports writer, or maybe even it might have been a Chicago sports writer during the Bulls days. Because Dick Motta was the coach of the Bulls.
I believe that's true. Yeah. But I don't know for a fact. But I guess I've always heard that as the source.
Yeah, I guess this is when it sort of became a nationally known phrase. It's my understanding. So.
That's my guy. Dick Motta is a great, great coach.
His suit in this game, his suit. That's a wonderful leisure suit.
That's what he is in the that Hall of Fame just based off his suits. Like, those are so great. The best part during the Bulls pregame, they always show, you know, classic footage or whatever, and they show like a Dick Motta. He's there, and it's like a checkerboard, like an orange checkerboard. It's just like an unbelievably ugly suit, and it's just like, yes. Like, the perfect guy. It's got like a collar, and like, it's just ridiculous. And I love Dick Motta so much. But yeah, this is the popular of the opera isn't over till the fat lady sings. But yeah, we don't know the exact. I always heard the Chicago story, but I have no idea. I mean, it could have been, you know, anybody. But and who wouldn't clamor to say that they were the first to break that news to the world? But there you
go. So this Seattle had a decent sized lead, but the Bullets had a decent sized lead, but the Sonics were able to trim it down to 4 with 90 seconds left from 11 points. Kupchak came up with a 3-point play, and then Freddie Brown, he hit a short jumper, and then Silas got a tip in to cut it to 101-99. Silas then fouled Unseld. He was a 55% shooter from the line during the playoffs. He actually did hit 2 free throws. And then Washington was able to kind of seal it from there. There were some free throws from there, and that was pretty much it. Kupchak got a really good offensive rebound during the sequence at one point. So they really played well. And the Bullets were able to win this series on the road. They were one of the, I have on my notes, third ever team to win in the seventh game of the road. But I think the Celtics were the first against the Bucks. So I maybe somewhere along the line, maybe there's one that we're missing. But either way, it is a rare occurrence as we have
yes,
said.
Yeah. So. Well, as we'll get deeper in this, yeah, you'll see that it not often that it has happened. So yeah, it was definitely a rare thing to happen, and definitely just a very interesting series, and you know, we obviously get it the next year, not as exciting as this one, but still an interesting series, an interesting look at you know, late 70s NBA, where it's unique. I mean, the Washington Bulls and the Seattle Supersonics were in you know, back-to-back finals, and that's pretty cool.
And the Bullets were actually a way better team the next year, but they lost the series. The Sonics were a better team too, but not quite as much better. The Bullets would have been heavily favored in that series. I guess they probably were heavily favored in that series, but the Bullets lost several times when they were heavily favored too. So I don't know, they were a weird team, but you know, they made 4 finals and won a championship in a decade. Yeah, I think a lot of teams will take that.
Yeah, not bad. Yeah, we don't. I really don't know if we think of them as really. I mean, not obviously, I wouldn't call them a dynasty, but as a really, you know, a big part of the 70s. You know, I mentioned a little bit ago that, you know, they were one of the few constants, you know, in terms of the top of the NBA. But they don't really seem like we talk about it that much, or that we mention them that much. And it is. They had a great accomplishment in that decade. Right.
Unseld's, you know, regard highly. So. On to the next game?
Absolutely, let's do it.
All right, number 11 is the Los Angeles Lakers and Boston Celtics in 2010. The Lakers beat the Celtics 83-79.
So not the most exciting game, but hey.
No, that's... yeah. And yeah, this was...
That was that series. That series was... This is a good game seven. That was an ugly series. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was an ugly game seven too, but it was close and tight and well performed. But yeah, this was the 12th time that the Celtics and Lakers had met in the NBA Finals, which is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it's it's those teams, man.
Yeah,
it's not fair.
No,
it's not fair, Jason. It's just not fair. But yeah, it's an interesting one. As I mentioned, kind of an ugly series. This is the game six. I saw the Celtics lose, you know, 89-67, and really the Lakers in a lot of ways never looked back. I mean, this is a close game, but really after that, you sort of felt the momentum changing in a lot of ways, and it seemed like the Lakers were, you know, definitely the team to beat. And there was issues too. You know, obviously Kendrick Perkins got hurt, a few other issues here and there. But yeah, that was It was that game that I remember vividly of being like, ooh.
Yeah.
And then this game was ugly as sin, but I really always kind of had an idea, you know, watching it, because, you know, it's fresh in my mind, or at least somewhat fresh in my mind, is that the Lakers a lot of time really controlled that game for the most part.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Gasol and Bynum were really, you know, beasted during that game. You know, 13 offensive rebounds. Granted, you know, Perkins wasn't there. It sounds, because Perkins kind of has a reputation as being like really a bad player. Like, it's funny to think of now, but that actually made a difference.
He was a big deal for that team.
Yeah, he was. I mean,
huge deal.
He was a good defender, good rebounder. You know, he was important for that team. And they had Rasheed Wallace, but, you know, he was getting old. You know, Garnett, that wasn't, you know, his strength. I mean, he was a great player, obviously, and they did their best. But yeah, there was just one highlight where Gasol just, you know, he goes up and Rasheed and Garnett and a third Celtic are all defending him. He just kind of like fights up and he gets a lay in, and it totally like destroys any like soft critique that anyone would have had of Paul Gasol. I mean, just it's like that is just a tough play to fight through those three guys to make that play. It was, you know, one of the baskets toward the end of the game, and you know, it was some great stuff. I mean, it was able, you know, despite, you know, Kobe shooting, you know, he was 6 of 24 during the game. You know,
yeah, did not have a good game.
You know, I mean, he scored like 24 points, I think, but he was able to get to the line at least. I mean, he shot a lot of free throws, so he was able to do that. I mean, you know, Ron Artest, you know, played good defense and made some key plays and made a couple 3-pointers. So, you know, they were able to, you know, get some great stuff out of everybody. And Kobe did just enough. I mean, he also had 15 rebounds. So, you know, he played well in other areas, but it was not a good shooting night for him.
Yeah, it's 0 of 6 from three as well. So, yeah. And if you watch a lot of the video and remember the highlights of that, there was a lot. I mean, the Celtics, it seemed their goal was, hey, let's let Bynum and Gasol beat us and not let, you know, Kobe. Because they're bringing double teams. They were very much focusing on not letting, you know, Kobe get in a lot of open looks, which, you know, in retrospect, I mean, when you don't have Perkins, might not have been a good idea to, you know, let Bynum and Gasol go nuts. And this was a series that I remember a lot of ways was, and you mentioned, Gasol was able to sort of shed a lot of, because he had that reputation for a while of being, you know, when he was in Memphis and, you know, a member of the Grizzlies or whatever, of being a, you know, not a championship player, you know, not a little saw, you know, this sort of stuff. And he came here and absolutely just had a great, great series. And Bynum was coming into his own as well. And people sort of forget what trajectory he was on, you know, largely after this finals and after these playoffs. It was a guy that, oh, look, this could be a really like a legitimately great player. And you know, for a 2-3 year span, I mean, this guy was nearly unstoppable, and really people, you know what, he was 24, 25, I think, at that point. So people were saying, oh man, you know, a big man, you know, 25 years old, finally getting it together. And then now that we know him, he's sort of a caricature of himself that he was. But yeah, this is a big period for Bynum, Gasol, and the Lakers. And it really sort of felt like, oh man, this is like a huge dynasty in the making. At least that's how I thought at the time, with Bynum just starting to get ready to go. But it didn't quite go that way, unfortunately. But as things sometimes don't do. But yeah, it was definitely an interesting game. Phil Jackson had a great quote, which I think kind of sums up these entire, you know, this entire playoff series, and especially this game seven. He said, well, it's done. It wasn't well done, but it was done. And we did it with perseverance. So yeah, not much there. And Kobe, of course, after this game, in perfect Kobe fashion, says, quote, I just got one more than Shaq. You can take that to the bank. You know who I am. I don't forget anything. So, yeah.
So
priorities definitely set straight for Kobe Bryant after this game.
This was something that I had thought of. I was thinking of it earlier today. Do you think it's fair to count, like, the these titles as part of a Kobe Bryant, Phil Jackson Lakers dynasty? Because yeah, I'm reluctant to think that
it's a
too.
Weird, yeah, but, it's a weird Jackson dynasty, but yeah, it's still.
But I mean,
it's hard to ignore. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if you think, you know, because we link, you know, all the Tim Duncan years, and obviously the early part of the Tim Duncan stuff, you know, those teams are way different than the late teams. I mean, the only player that they have in common are Duncan. At least Fisher is, you know, on all the Lakers teams as well, and you know, even the Celtics dynasty. I mean, it's Bill Russell and Sam Jones. That's pretty much it for guys who were on all those teams. You know, there were a number of guys who had, you know, obviously had multiple titles during that time, but you know, that whole cast rotated as well. So, I mean, I think I don't know what case I would make, but I think you can make a case that, you know, you can kind of link the two, you know, title teams, multi-title teams into kind of one dynasty, you know. You know,
and I think a big part of Kobe's success a lot of times is, you know, Phil. I mean, that was really, you know, we talk about those, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about those, you know, the late 2000s Lakers teams and stuff. And there was a lot of just weird, you know, with Rudy Tomjanovich coaching and just a lot of, they were a weird team. They were, you know, not just Kobe was kind of off the rails. That was, you know, the years where he was just shooting like crazy. And then, you know, hey, you know, don't shoot as much. And then he wouldn't, you know, and it took a lot of Phil Jackson sort of reeling that in a lot of ways and being that guy who could really speak to Kobe. And especially when you look at the two big men too. I mean, yeah, you kind of have to do it, even though it is, you know, a remarkably different team. But yeah, like you said, it's not really, then what do we do with the Duncan Popovich stuff? Yeah, I would count it, but it's unique. You don't necessarily think of this as a Phil Jackson team. You know, I don't, at least, because I always think of him just running off, you know, three in a row. That's how he does it. He doesn't do, you know, a one-off here, but
I mean, I guess the difference in this, you know, in the Bryant Lakers teams versus the other situations we talked about is that, like, you know, for a, you know, 2 or 3 years, the Lakers were nowhere near being a contender, where, you know, in pretty much all those other cases, every season, those teams were a contender to beat the title or at least make the conference finals or whatever, you know. So I guess it's a little bit different, but I don't know. It's just an interesting thing to think about. So
absolutely. Well, speaking of Phil Jackson, this was, you know, in Ever the Phil, he was considering departing after the season that he was going to leave the team. But then he returned for one last campaign in 2010-11. Did not go very well. They were swept out of the playoffs by the Mavericks and finished their season with Andrew Bynum shoving J.J. Barea and getting and setting the stage for what would kind of become the Andrew Bynum thing for a while afterwards. And just like the symbolic ending of whatever that Lakers thing was. But yeah, it's pretty funny. But yeah, Jackson, of course, always the always never really quite happy in his own place and never quite sure what he's doing. It's classic Phil Jackson, but he came back for one last campaign and didn't go well. Probably should have just left here, but that's all right.
Yeah, that's okay.
It'll happen.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave just for a little while.
Oh, no.
But we'll be back soon. We've got more shows coming on the game sevens of the NBA finals. So check us out and we'll be back soon.